And welcome to the HalfCorner.com Power Hour. I'm your host, Mitch Pomp. This is my co-host, Diggity Dan Ford. How are we doing, Dan?
Oh, the best we can. The best we can after that national championship game.
Yeah, let's just jump right into it. Let's jump into the college football finals. Let's recap that real quick. Let's just jump to the biggest point. What went wrong for Georgia in that game?
I think, and this is going to be counterintuitive, and it will be completely against what the coaches, like if you watched the ESPN coaches film room, it will be completely counter to what they thought. But I think Georgia really screwed up getting away from the passing game in the second half. I think that's...
I don't disagree.
Yeah.
I mean, their biggest play in the second half was the Fromm touchdown in a situation where, like, they need to go to Fromm here to make a play. Because I'm a big believer of this in football. As good as your running backs are, as good as this everything else is, sometimes you need your quarterback to win you the game, especially in championship games. I think that's a fair... that's a thing that I think most people agree
especially,
with. And I think Georgia had to do
especially that. Against an elite defense. Like, Alabama has an elite defense. Yeah. You're not going to spend all day just running down their throats. They're not Oklahoma.
No, and I think the other issue with Georgia, too, was... they ran the ball just straight up the middle every time. You didn't see a lot of stretch or anything outside. And, like, you saw it wasn't the coaches' room where they ran at number 94 for Alabama, the defensive tackle. He was having a great game. He was a beast all night. Every coach in the coaches' film room was salivating over how good he was playing. And most of your second-half play calling was just runs up the middle.
Yeah, it
you know, so I think the few that had success were to the outside. They didn't really get to that. You didn't see any screens or anything.
Yeah.
It seems like they just really choked.
It felt
play call. Not really the players, more the coaches.
It felt like
it was kind of like the Falcons Super Bowl.
It felt like Kirby Smart was a guy who's never been in this kind of position, and just did not like. Well, we got the lead. Like, I think Georgia. I think in some ways they were shocked they had that kind of lead at the half. They were shocked they were dominating Alabama so thoroughly, just dominating Alabama's offense. And they just went, well, shoot, let's. Let's take all the risk out of this game. Let's take all the risk out and just run the ball.
I think some of that
and
fear and that stress, I think, kind of came out of Georgia at halftime where, like, I think they were playing so well because they were scared of Alabama, and then they weren't scared going into that second half, if that makes sense, where, like, some of that stress and some of that fear that probably led to them being more aggressive or just, you know, like being a little more successful with things kind of went out. They kind of lost that fear. And they kind of lost that eye of the tiger, if you will. They weren't scared, and I think that hurt Georgia. They weren't fighting. They weren't fighting like a wounded.
Yeah, they weren't clawing for, like, everything and going, look, in the first half, they seemed to realize that we can't just, like, line up and beat Alabama. We've got to do something. And they were right, and it was working. And then in the second half, they're like, no, okay, we're better than Alabama. Let's just be tougher than them. And it's like, well, no, that's not going to work. And they just needed to have more passes to keep them off guard. Like, they were doing a great thing of throwing you on first down, which, you know, the throws are going to be easier. You're going to have more guys open because the defense is going to be preparing
especially
for the run.
Especially because Alabama was coming up and playing the run on the first down. Like, there were plenty of slots. And, like, if you look at Fromm's numbers, most of his incompletions were from drops or just great defensive plays. He had a great game. It's not like Fromm played poorly at all. I mean, the interception, I think the second one wasn't really his fault. You know, it's just tipped. What are you going to do?
Yeah, the first interception wasn't really his fault either. He threw the ball up there, and the DB just, like, wrestled it away from the receiver. Like, that could have easily been a catch if his receiver just clamps down on that ball.
Yeah. So I think I agree with you. I think what really went wrong for Georgia was it wasn't even thing anybody did on the field necessarily. I think it was –
coaches got tired.
You
got
to put it all in Kirby Smart and his staff. Coach just choked that game away.
And, and there was really bad officiating. Like, that's – there's no point not mentioning that. And look, we hate both of these teams. We don't really give a shit. I mean, especially me. You do hate one more than the other. But, like, I hate both of these teams. And I'm just going to sit here and tell you, the Big Ten referees who called this game were fucking terrible.
Awful. To the officiating point, another point I've seen a lot of Georgia fans say, well, if that block punt counted. Well, A, I'm not sure if he was all sides or not. But it was illegal procedure or whatever. So the play should have been whistled dead to begin with anyway. So the block punch, it never
like the
should
play, like the ball should have been whistled.
Play never
should. You know.
Yeah. And there were some other bad calls. There was nothing egregious. There's nothing where I would say, like, Georgia lost this game.
It was just, like, a lot of just really bad calls.
No, it helped. I think there were some calls that probably helped Alabama also, if you look at it. But ultimately, you can't blame it on the
refs. Also, defensive holding did not exist. Yeah. But it kind of never
which
existed.
Which is fine.
Alabama, though.
Yeah, but I think you see, like, you watched the NFL playoff last week. There's a lot of defensive holding going on. I think it's just in these games you kind of let players get away with that a little bit more, I think. And I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
It's playoff football. Sometimes you – same thing with basketball. Sometimes you got to be a little more loose when there's more important things.
It just seems like Alabama always seems – like Alabama – part of why Alabama is so difficult to beat in the postseason is because defensive holding doesn't exist.
Yeah. I want to jump to this, though. Speaking of coaches who you know, were used to a situation where pretty damn calm, I guess. How ballsy was Nick Saban for bitching his former championship-winning quarterback has got the last 3 years for a true freshman.
Well, Jalen Hurts hasn't won a title for him, has he?
No, he won the first one. It's freshman when they beat Clemson the
first
time.
Oh, I didn't know he was – okay, he was on Hurts, that team? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I lost track.
He's like a true freshman, actually, yeah.
Okay.
Or a redshirt freshman.
Okay. So, like, yeah. So – but he was playing bad. Like, the one thing is that a lot of coaches – and this is a thing that's come up with Michigan people because there's a lot of Michigan people who watch that game and were like, man, we stuck with a terrible senior quarterback all year because, wow, the freshman can't handle the pressure. Alabama, in the biggest game of the year, with everything on the line, went, junior, get him off the field. We got to get the freshman in the game. This guy can't play. Like,
yeah. I loved it, though. I love when football coaches don't kind of make these calls enough, I don't think. Like, you see it more in, like, baseball and basketball, especially where you pull out a guy if he's not playing well and put in someone else. I kind of see, like, kind of some more coaches do this. There's some other issues that happen, you know, when you pull a guy. Like, I think we saw it on the – at the very end of the game, they're trying to down the ball in the right spot. was it Tua? Didn't even know what he was doing.
Yeah, well, I think he lost track of how much time was going off the – yeah.
Yeah. And I think, like, but he's also, like, never practiced that before, probably. I think they pointed out in the coach's film room, and it's just,
And then so David, my favorite thing was David Cutcliffe going, well, I just learned, I mean, I've been in this long, I want to say, David Cutcliffe was the MVP, the absolute MVP of the coach's film room. But
that was probably the best coach's film room they've ever done, because you had Cutcliffe kind of running point. But no one, like, stepped over each other in that film room. So good. Like, everyone had a lot of respect for each other.
Yes. Also, it felt like everybody had a lot of respect for Cutcliffe. Which, last week, when Gary Patterson tried to be, like, the point man, and then everybody just clowned on him, like, what the fuck do you know? Why are you talking over me? Everybody was like, well, shut the fuck up, Gary. I know more than, you know. And which
it was a great, you know,
which
what
was hilarious
really
in its own way, but
they're not. We don't talk about him enough. Probably, I didn't hear like a ton of people. I thought Sumlin did a great job.
Sumlin was awesome.
You could tell, like and it was probably just because he's played both these teams, like you know, in the past 6 years or whenever he's been at A&M, he knows both offenses pretty well at this point, and defenses. Sumlin was a key.
I would say least valuable player was Matt Luke, which you knew that going in. But, like,
that was the Northwestern?
No, that's the Ole Miss coach.
I thought that was, okay, Fitzgerald.
He's the least accomplished person in the room. And B, he talked too much.
Was he an assistant in Georgia or something?
No, I think so. But I think it's also that he's just an SEC coach. And he was on those Ole Miss. He was an assistant with those Ole Miss teams that beat Alabama. Like, he was on the staff.
I would have probably liked to see, like, Leach in there.
Everybody wants to see Leach.
Maybe over Gundy.
Gundy was a major disappointment in some ways because he's just not that talkative a guy. But
no, but you can tell when you watch Gundy watching that game, you can tell you can tell Mike Gundy fucking gets football.
Oh God, yeah. But he's also like the
most
stone cold ice in the veins. Like when that play when the touchdown at the end of the game happened, he just stares it down like, yep, yeah, that's ball game. Bobo,
like you can tell a guy like this is just what he does for fun. Almost.
Bobo didn't talk a lot, but like Bobo at the end of the game was heartbreaking, and I think was probably the most that was so great that he was there because you know he was there. Yeah. With Georgia.
I think either way it would have been great because like you know he recruited. Yeah. I think he recruited Nick Chubb. He recruited a lot of these seniors. He knows these guys.
And he's an alum.
So I think either, whatever know, the outcome was.
He wasn't just an assistant coach there. He's an alum. He played quarterback there.
Yeah, and played quarterback there, you know. He's a pretty, and kind of a mini Georgia legend, if you will, especially for people who grew up, you know, kind of
in the dark era.
In the 90s. Bobo was a bright spot. He's a decent quarterback on a bad team.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you know, especially at the end of the game with Bobo, he was pacing, he wasn't sitting down, you could tell he's really into it. It was a great, just a great job by ESPN, I thought. That was
my
really
my
good.
Favorite thing is when Greek last name kicker missed that kick in the most, like, oh my God, you didn't even, like, you are an embarrassment to your, like, they all acted like somebody had died. Like, they all basically just went there and went, well... Like Cutcliffe going, do you hate to see that happen to anybody? Like, he talked about it like...
I love the Cutcliffe though, immediately, when they watched the replay, was like, this is why he missed.
Yeah.
Like, they broke it down immediately. And I love, like, when the coaches talk about, what do you say to him? And you say, he's got to forget it, kid.
Yeah.
You know, that, I kind of
that
like
was Gundy's
the
best
kind
moment,
of advice
too.
They gave. Yeah.
That was Gundy's best moment, because he was the first one to go, look, you might have to win this damn game. So, it didn't happen.
Yeah, sucks, but you got to get over it. And I think that was a good insight into what's going on in a coach's mind, where, like, a guy misses the field goal, but you don't care because that's your guy.
And it's the
you
difference.
Your guy throws an interception, that's your guy. Like, how you kind of, like, would coach them back up, I thought that was very – fun insight. Like, if you're someone who's, like, interested in being a coach or just learning more about it, watch those coaches' film rooms because, like, you learn so much.
Yeah, and that's the difference between a fan and a coach. Like, that's the most fundamental difference is the ability to A, see what happened almost before it happens. All coaches kind of have that. But to go, all right, that didn't that's over. I can't.
It didn't work. We got to move on because you know why are you going to fix it? It's just like if you're, you know, thinking about, like, a real issue in real life. Why are you going to look back on it? You got to move on. Like, you made a mistake.
We'll deal with that tomorrow.
Keep moving. And it kind of shows why these guys are very successful and at the top of their field, because they do have that mindset where, okay, we fucked up. Let's fix it and let's not do it again.
You can't coach people during the game. Like, you will do the coaching points on that tomorrow. Like,
Well, I think in some ways, too, when you're going to be successful, though, you don't worry about mistakes you learn from.
Well, when it's time to figure it out.
No, you worry about learning from them. I think it's the big thing. You don't get emotional. I think you don't act like a woman, Dan. You get focused. You know, like if that was Pat Summitt in there, she'd probably be crying or something.
Pat Summitt would beat your ass even if she didn't.
Well, she
is she dead?
She's dead.
Is she dead or is she just like wishes
she was
dead?
She died
dead.
Like 2 years ago. I think she's dead. She's dead to me.
She knows what she did.
But back to that move by Saban, this is something that's never been done before. The closest thing was probably when true freshman Tebow rotated in, but that's just what they did.
Yeah, but that's something they did all year. Like, that was – he was like the goal line package, like, you know, because Chris Leak couldn't run.
Running back.
Basically, Chris Leak was such a bad runner that in the red zone they were like, well, we got to have a running quarterback to score any points.
So how much of that, you know, we talked about, like, coaches and experience and being cool and not worrying. How much of that was just Saban, he's been in this before, he's comfortable in this environment where he's willing to make that move? Could you see, like, any other coaches kind of doing
that? I think that's...
Could you even see, like, your boy Jim Harbaugh doing this if this was his first national championship?
The one that springs to mind is, like, Tom Osborne. God, but Tom Osborne hadn't even won one yet when he did that. When he, like... put Brooks Bollinger in instead of Tommy Frazier, because Tommy Frazier was coming off injuries. He did have blood clots in his legs for most of the season. And then Brooks made a bad throw, and he's like, all right, Tommy, you're in. I know you're fucked up. I know you haven't really played much this year because of your injuries, but you're in. Go win this thing.
Well, Dan, what I wanted to ask was, though, how much more was that move? You think that move was more experienced and based on Saban had been there before, or is it more Saban's just – that ballsy and a riverboat gambler? I feel it's more because he's just comfortable in that environment.
I think he's
been there how many times?
I think
times,
it's like,
you know?
The fact that, like, for a lot of coaches who make a lot of decisions, it comes down to, God, what am I going to do? I mean, they never want to admit that, but they even kind of did in the film room, because, like, there's a moment where they're like, yeah, you know, they'll give you a lot of shit for that. I think part of it is just he's won so many games and won so many titles that it's like, you know what? I'm not going to second guess myself. This is the right decision. I'm going with it. Whereas if you've never gotten that title, how we talked about never gotten there before, I think it becomes easy to go, oh, shit, just go with what's saying. Go with what's saying.
Yeah. Yeah. But just a great, I mean, Saban, though, I think we can say it now, new Riverboat Gambler of the SEC. Saban gets it. He's the new Riverboat Gambler.
And how much is that game different if Tua doesn't escape that sack in the third quarter?
Yeah. Or if he doesn't recover from throwing that interception on the back. You know, that was another thing that was the danger of putting into it was lack of communication and not playing with guys. Like, I've been watching a lot of basketball recently, and they talk a lot about rotations and guys gelling. That matters in football, too, because what we saw what Saban did later on, put in a true freshman wide receiver, had a true freshman running back play, guys that Tua had practiced with and was familiar with being around, who were used to playing with him, you know, whether it's some blowouts or in practice, you know, with second string. That was a great move by Saban, too. That was a really underrated move, I think. Like, if they talk about the big switch at quarterback, I think a bigger move was putting in guys Tua was used to playing around.
And that is also a unique advantage that Alabama has over most teams in that their recruiting goes so deep that they can put in an inferior freshman player and the guy's not that far off skill-wise from the more experienced player.
No, and he'll still make plays.
They can have that kind of rotation.
Yeah. The leading rusher for Alabama was a true freshman, the guy who kind of came on there in the fourth. The guy who caught the touchdown, true freshman. So just some great moves, if I say. That was an excellent
job. And we also got to talk about, the game, the play that lost in the game was just complete blown assignment, blown coverage. I think Cutcliffe put it best, where he was like, you got a senior safety, you got a senior cornerback, and they both got outplayed by a freshman quarterback and a freshman receiver because that corner got completely made a fool of. He didn't, you know, and the coaches called it rerouting. Basically, when you play cover two defense, the cornerback has to jam his the wide receiver and force him inside. You can never, ever, 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 ever let a guy get outside you on cover two.
No, because especially in cover two, the two safeties are the zone's more inside.
Yeah, correct. Yeah. You've got to force the receiver back towards the safety, and you've got to do it at all costs, and, even if he gets by you, because the help is with the safety. So you force him towards the help, and the safety got completely looked off by a freshman quarterback, a senior safety. Who should know, he should know every move, who shouldn't be fooled by a freshman quarterback. The safety was late getting over there because, you know, he followed a quarterback's eye.
How much do you think, the change kind of hurt Georgia's defense in a way where they weren't preparing for that?
I think there's maybe something to that, all of their safeties spent all week preparing to stop, you know, to stop the run and to be, you know, getting in there and stopping option keepers and, you know, dealing with a lot of plus one runs. And then, you know, Tua came in and they really didn't run much of that anymore. You know,
no,
he did scramble. It's not he's not athletic, but they didn't call a lot of plus one runs.
But I think, what was it? The second Tua touchdown too. How crazy was that play where it seemed like he just threw it up there.
Yeah. And it just happened to get caught by a guy. Because he absolutely did not throw to that particular receiver.
No, and it seems like the game had a lot of little things like that, where Tua doesn't get, you know, Tua doesn't get sacked on that play in overtime. I'm not sure they can throw the long ball.
Yeah,
you know, which is an easier throw for a younger quarterback than kind of throwing something in a more congested area.
Like Tua had a horseshoe up his ass. There's no question about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know.
So Alabama does it. Last words on the
You know who Tua reminded me of? He reminded me of a more athletic Greg McElroy. Where he did lots of stupid ass shit. And he really it should not have worked. But by God, the game
you mentioned McElroy though, and McElroy was a guy who's kind of trusted that everyone around him was really good.
Yes.
And they were. And I think that's part of how to really succeed at Alabama is just go, I got the best players in the nation around me. I don't have to do everything. They can do shit too, you know. That's trusting your teammates. And you'll probably see more of that next year as Tua, you know, works with the first team more in spring and everything. Dan, last thing on this national championship.
It definitely reminds me more of like a Florida State, like a classic Bobby Bowden Florida State quarterback, where it's just like, hey, I've got the best wide receivers in college football. I've got all of this skill talent around me. Why don't I just throw it up here and let somebody do something? Like, why wouldn't I?
Dan, I want to jump to this really quick before we move on to our final season rankings here. Can Georgia recover from this? I think, okay, I'll give my reasons why at least they can be back in the mix.
They
East is awful. Still bad.
Yeah, the SEC is terrible.
They're still the... Like, even though you're losing Sonny Michelle and Chubb, I mean, you're still keeping the Smith kid looks
we
great.
Gotta see, we got to see
like
if they can replace that offensive production. That's the big question. Can they replace?
But I think they've got the running backs, too. You get Fromm another year. Those receivers are really good for Georgia. I think you'll see Georgia throw a lot more next year, which just makes sense with the evolution of Fromm and everything. I think Georgia can be right back in the mix for sure, unless it just kind of hovers over them what happened. But that's also the kind of advantage of college football is you just lost a lot of your guys. There are guys who said, who might be saying, well, if I played, it would have been different. They want to go out there and prove that.
Yeah.
You know? But I guarantee you, Kirby Smart will be making some calls to Dan Quinn and the Atlanta Falcons. Especially if the Falcons can continue their postseason success here on how to recover and how to prepare for that type of thing. But what do you think? Do you think Georgia can bounce back? Or do you think they're looking at like an 8-win season next year?
Well, see, they've just got such a huge talent advantage over most of the teams in the SEC. It's going to come down to how long does it take Dan Mullen to get Florida going? And can Dan Mullen get
it
going?
But, I mean, you saw Georgia. To be fair, Georgia's going to have another top 5 recruiting class. So they're going to keep getting a lot of talent.
Yeah.
You know?
Georgia has recruited at such a high level that it's hard for me to sit here and go, well, they're not going to be back because – And they were ahead of schedule. Like, they shouldn't have been this good quick to begin with.
No, and besides that second half, they're a really well-coached team, I thought, especially after the loss to Auburn and, like, where they kind of loosened their, loosened up a little bit and they played a lot better, I thought.
And it comes back to, like, when they're, will they learn that, hey, we got a little bit too tight-assed in this thing and then come back and be better?
Yeah.
So Yeah, I think they're going to be – I don't see them falling apart as much as it would be great if they did.
No, but I think they'll be right back in the mix for the SEC.
And
I see how quick Florida can reload, but I don't think it's going to happen.
And it's like Tennessee's fucked. Like, they're going to continue being shits.
Besides Florida, you're
Missouri,
the biggest competition.
Missouri.
Like South Carolina.
Oh, my God. We got to talk about how bad Missouri's fucked up. They've hired Derek Dooley to take over their offense. So, like – the one thing that Missouri had that was competent has now been replaced with one of the most incompetent people who has ever been in the SEC
it's gonna
back
be awesome.
To coach offense. Yeah. And they're going to try to run the Dallas Cowboys offense in college football.
All right, Dan.
Oh, my God.
Right, Dan, let's move on, though. Let's move to our let's do our final top 5 rankings. You want me to go first here? I got mine prepared already.
Sure, sure, sure.
So,
well, right. I know
final
who your
number one
is going to be, so I'm just going to go ahead and be the dick and say
what. Well, let's start. I'm going to start with 5.
Okay, we'll start with five.
Number 5, got Ohio State. They finished the year really well. It was between Ohio State and Penn State, but I just thought Ohio State really bounced back pretty damn well from the Oklahoma loss. I wonder what happened if they were in the play. If this was a 16 playoff, what would Ohio State have done? Number 4. I have got Clemson. I think Clemson kind of got shell-shocked against Alabama. I think they're going to bounce back and have a good year. This is kind of an off year, but this is a reload year for Clemson. I think they'll be back next year ready to really go. Right, number 3, I've got Alabama, Dan. Because you know what? Because my top 2 teams, they have not beaten either one of them. Number 2, I've got Auburn because they beat Alabama. And number 1... I've got UCF, baby. The Power Hour national champion, UCF. Number 1, undefeated. Beat the team that beat Alabama. How can you not say UCF isn't the best team in the nation if you believe in the transitive property, Dan? You can't.
Oh, man.
Did you expect that?
That is exactly what I expected. That is literally exactly how I expected the top 3 to go. Like, word for word. So mine's going to be a little bit different. I'm going to go Oklahoma number 5.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, check that. Ohio State number 5. Oklahoma number – check that again. Clemson number 5. I think they kind of got exposed in that game as the ACC was shitty this year. Like, the ACC was the best conference in college football last year. There's zero question about it. They were 4 out of 5 this year.
Yeah. Well, and then how much of that Clemson loss was that Clemson hadn't really played a competitive game?
Well, they played competitive games. They just played competitive games against teams that they shouldn't have been competitive with.
Not from the second week of November on.
Yeah, they...
Like, they killed South Carolina, they killed Miami. Yeah. Like, they hadn't...
Yeah, that's true.
They hadn't been punched in the mouth. Like, Alabama punched in the mouth, and they kind of didn't know what to do.
I think that team just was just nowhere near as good as they were last year, which is what most people thought going into the season, and then they just kept winning games, and we're like, well, maybe we're wrong. Maybe Clemson's just reloaded. Maybe. And it just sort of turns out that the ACC stunk this year. Well, maybe not stink. The ACC just was mediocre. The ACC went back to being a mediocre football league.
The ACC took a step back.
Yes.
I think that's fair.
The Pac-12, you got the Pac-12 was like the drizzling shits. The ACC was like a stinky fart. You know, 4, I'm going to go Ohio State. At the end of the day, you lost to Iowa by 100 points. You got beat by Oklahoma. And I'm not going to, like, lose my mind because you beat a really shitty, overrated USC team. Like, I think that is crazy. I think considering that Alabama ended up winning the thing, I think we can now look back with the benefit of hindsight and go, the playoff committee probably got it right. Like, who the fourth team was. Probably.
Yep.
Number 3, I'm going to go Oklahoma. I mean, obviously, I think they came, like, a whisker away from being in the national championship game. And I think they may have given Alabama a lot more problems. I think that game just would have been radically different. I think it would have been, like, 56-57.
You might have seen Tua come in earlier.
Tua might not have ever had to come into the game, though, because I think Jalen Hurts would have just run for 500 yards in the game because, like, true. Oklahoma had no idea what a run fit was. So Jalen Hurts would have just ran all over him.
Yeah, just audible to the side where no one is.
Or Jalen Hurts.
That's the key to beating Oklahoma now, is you just look where no one is.
Just look over to the side that's completely empty.
It's like playing a guy in Madden who doesn't know how to audible. That's what
it's like playing the guy in Madden who thinks goal line defense is, you know, a good...
The best
like
thing
to run. Like, punt block. Like, I'm going to run punt block. This is unstoppable. Yeah. And then you're just like, well,
let me run a slant.
I'm going to run a slant and this is done.
Or a quick pitch.
Yeah, or just like, yeah, just a quick throw to the outside, or a quick pitch to the outside. It's like, oh, shit. All of our guys just came straight down into the, you know. But, you know, I'm going to go Oklahoma number 3. I'm going to go UCF number 2 because, while they did finish undefeated, they did not have really a win against too much competition in the regular season.
They did beat Auburn, though.
They did beat Auburn in a bowl game. Still, they beat Auburn in a bowl game. That's what got them to number 2 for me. But, you know, they didn't really play a big-time team in the regular season. So, for that reason, I've got them number 2. And then number 1 is, well, Alabama won the playoff. I'm going to put them number 1. Just call me the coach's poll, because my win is bought and paid for by the system.
All right. I think next week, Dan, we'll talk a little bit more about the whole season and kind of recap and maybe give out some awards of that first annual Power Hour College Football Awards show.
It'd be a lot of fun.
Yeah. So if we remember to do that, I will.
If we're not all dead.
That'll be next week.
We're not all dead.
It was a fun. Yeah. It was a fun season, though, I will say. Maybe a season where, like, I don't think it was a clear-cut team that was better than everybody else, but that's okay.
Well, and I think when we write the epitaph on this season, it's going to be a year where we look back and go, man, everybody kind of sucked. Like, nobody was really all that great, and it's...
Even, like, the guy who won the Heisman, you're like, well, Baker Mayfield had a good year, but it...
And I think we're all going to look back and go, God damn it, Alabama won this year, even with, like, a bunch of freshmen. Like, this just felt like the year somebody weird was going to win.
It's almost like if like Steph Curry and Kevin Durant or like Klay Thompson get hurt, and then like the Warriors still win the championship this year. And
it's just like, damn it.
You know, like, damn it. Like, thought this would be, or maybe like LeBron gets hurt and like stuff.
And then the Cavs, still make the, win the East, like without LeBron.
When the, yeah, like the poor Raptors are just still left out. Dan, speaking of basketball, it is basketball time. We are, you know, Martin Luther King Day. It's this Monday, and that's kind of like the second big or third big holiday for the NBA. So we're kind of full swing. We got the trade deadline coming up in a couple of weeks. Have you been keeping up? Are you ready to keep up with the NBA? Especially primetime games return to ABC, I think this Saturday or next Saturday. I think next Saturday. So
I'm mentally prepared.
It's time for basketball to take over our lives, basically, yes. For the next, what, 2 months?
My body is ready.
Yeah. And let's talk the big story this week, LaVar Ball versus Luke Walton. LaVar Ball made some comments about Luke Walton, said he's lost the team. The way ESPN kind of framed it, it sounded like he said that's what his son said. If you watched the interview, it's not really – he prefaced it, actually, with I haven't talked to Lonzo, but this is what I think. So, yeah, we've got this. We've heard it. I mean, if you've been watching sports at all, you've heard this story a million times. Let's talk about it.
Sure.
One more time.
This is kind of like my breaking point with LaVar, because I liked it when he shit on, like, a random dumb Fox Sports bimbo for calling him a bad dad, because, well, that's what are you supposed to do? Like, if I was walking up to LaVar Ball and I told him, hey, I think you're a shitty dad, which I'm about to say, I would also expect him to clap back at me.
I don't think LaVar Ball is a shitty dad. I think he's a bad good dad.
I think he's like, a bad dad, but...
Listen, there are worse things to be than be like a helicopter parent from like California. That's what essentially what he is.
Yes.
He's a helicopter parent from California. I think a lot of kids would kill just to have a dad. So,
but that I didn't say he was a shit dad. I didn't say he was the worst dad.
He's a shitty. Okay.
He's a bad dad.
I think he's a bad good dad. That makes sense. Like I would give him like a 6 on the dad scale.
Like,
it's like, well, you're overbearing. You do all this
shit. He's definitely not over 5 after this.
He still provides for his kids. He clearly loves his kids. I think that's the important thing. But I think the bigger issue with all of this and the Lakers is just, I mean, I've been watching a lot of the Lakers a lot more recently. And I think the bigger issue is Luke Walton's just not fit to coach a young team. I think Luke Walton, he looked great with the Warriors, and it's not to say he's, oh, anybody would look good with the Warriors. That's not true. But it's easier for a first-time head coach to coach a team with that much talent, that much veteran leadership, and a team that's kind of set in their rotations and everything. He's kind of having to learn how – almost learn how to coach on the fly now, the Lakers, because you watch him, like, the rotations he sets and guys he's putting out there together. Clearly has no idea what he's doing.
I can't go that far. I will say that I just don't think this team is all that good. I think this is a team that came in overhyped, because I think Lakers fans in general still think it's 2003 and that they're always like one season away from being back.
Or like 2008.
Like, they're just
people forget those last Kobe championships like they didn't have. Like, they did rebuild overnight with Kobe.
They got gifted around a really great player.
No, they got gifted Paul Gasol, and they were really well coached.
Ultimately, like, Kobe Bryant never wins another title without Paul Gasol, but that's another argument for another day.
Probably, and not without Meta World Peace and Lamar Odom, like, reinventing their
career. Kobe Bryant just happened to be gifted at a time before this was, like, this is in vogue now, like, to be an unselfish superstar who shares the ball with people. Like, Kobe Bryant at the last years of his prime was gifted three of the most unselfish superstar level players in the NBA all on the team with him, so he could be like the biggest ball hog in the world without consequence. But that's for another.
And it worked. I mean, they won what, 2 titles?
So, yes,
I
mean, but that's a discussion for another time. But the thing with the Lakers is, I think they're delusional about the level of this team, because they constantly are going, we're right back in there. Showtime's right around the corner. And it's not right around the corner. Your team stinks. You're in a multi-year rebuild, and there doesn't seem to be any alpha on this team. There is no player to build around.
Yeah.
You've got a lot of nice role players and
you've got a nice
superstar.
You've got a core is what you've got.
But you don't have a winning
core. I don't
think
a core.
Like, nobody on this team is going to be the second best player on a great team.
But then also a young core. You're also got a core of guys who are, like, mostly 20.
Is Julius Randle really that young anymore, though? Like, Julius Randle's at the point.
It's like 20, isn't he?
Julius Randle's at the point where he should be showing you something.
Let me look it up. I think I like what Julius Randle's done, actually. But with this Laker, like, there's an intriguing core. And you know what? I think, considering how bad the rebuild could have gone, I think it's going pretty well. Considering the position they were put in with Kobe Bryant and the retirement tour and the awful contract and all that fun stuff, it could be a lot worse. And I think it's probably a little ahead of schedule. It's weird to say for a team that's won, like, what, 12 games? But they're certainly better than I thought they would have been 2 years ago. In terms of maybe the record doesn't show, and it didn't show kind of when they're losing streak when Lonzo was out. But what I've seen earlier in the year, I'm intrigued by what's going on with them. There's something there. I'm not sure what piece or what you have to do, if it can be done, but with the right set of circumstances, this could develop into a team that, like, by 2022 is contending for titles. That's 4 years from now, but that's the track, I think. So I think, especially if you can land Paul George.
Yeah, I mean, they're banking a lot. They're banking a lot on being able to pull a bunch of free agents, and they'll probably get Paul George.
He's openly, like, he's, like, out on the date with his wife, the Oklahoma City Thunder.
He's literally that meme, that now dated meme.
Yes, he's the meme.
Like, that's just who he is. Like, but, I mean, Paul George, he's not going to be a difference maker that's going to turn you into a contender. He's just not. Like, that's not – Paul George is never going to win a title as the best player on his team.
Okay, Julius Randle's 23, so we're about the time.
So, yeah,
3 years
at the point where we should start seeing something like
– No, but, Dan, I will say this. Paul George isn't exactly, like, the oldest man in the world either. He's still a pretty young guy. Was he, like, 27?
He is what he is.
I know he hasn't been in his 30s yet.
But he is what he is. Like, he's not going to suddenly
be
something else.
I think playing around Westbrook will kind of change. I mean, we saw with Oladipo, like, changing his approach to the game and all that stuff,
he's
too.
Beyond the point where playing with a superstar would change him. He's been on Team USA. Like he's been around all these guys. This isn't his first rodeo.
Paul George is 27. So, like, a 30-year-old Paul George, and if the Lakers can maybe hit and get a guy in the draft or another free agent.
They have to have another
Lakers
free agent to win anything. That's all I'm saying. Paul George is a really good player.
You know
he's
what? There's a guy.
He's an all-star level player.
Damn.
You're never winning.
There's a guy in Cleveland.
You're never winning anything with Paul George as your best player.
But there's a guy in Cleveland who pulled his kids from Akron to go to school in L.A. So clearly means that he's going to play for the Lakers.
And is LeBron James at his age enough? Is that
LeBron James, Paul George, and that core? Yeah. LeBron James is going to be – he's going to be winning – he's going to be top three in the league when he's 40. Think about that. That's how good LeBron is. Like, LeBron's not just pure athleticism anymore. He's the smartest – one of the – maybe the best mind.
Okay, here comes this. Why do you need – why do they have this ball kid if LeBron is coming? Because, like, what does – like, how does Ball play alongside LeBron? He doesn't.
Well, I mean, I think LaVar Ball actually could do pretty well with LeBron around him, actually, when you think about it. Like, especially with how he shoots. He's better off the ball. He's better catching and shooting. So sitting in the corner, you know, guy goes down, LeBron passes over. I think Lonzo would do very well. He's a great passer.
Like, the things he's good at is being, like, the guy with the ball, finding a guy and making a play.
Well, but
that's not what you're going to be with LeBron.
LeBron can't play, you know, 42 minutes.
That's fair.
You do need rotation, and you have a rotation where Lonzo can kind of lead.
I don't see LeBron wanting to play with a bunch of young guys at this stage of his career.
No, and, you know, you don't see it with the Cavs either, because you look who they signed. They signed guys LeBron knows.
Like, it's all old guys.
It's almost like the anti-Warriors. Like, the Warriors, you got Jordan Bell, McGraw, these, like, second-round picks, you know, who are contributing coming in. The Cavs are just like, LeBron's like, oh, I met that guy like 5 years ago.
LeBron is at the same stage of his, but LeBron's at the same stage of his life that most guys at his point are at, where they're just like, yeah, I'm old. I don't have that many great years left in me. I just want to play with guys who know what the fuck they're doing. I don't want to spend any more time.
No, and I think,
like, teaching other people how to play basketball.
Yeah. So I don't necessarily buy the Lakers thing. I buy Paul George more. They've got time to figure something out if they get Paul George. I mean, he's only 27. You probably got What?
I just don't see how many
6 years of him still in his athletic.
My thing is they might end up being good one day with Paul George. I don't see many of the guys in this team being a part of it.
Yeah, I mean, but I think they've got a core to make trades and do stuff. That's the other big thing. It's like, and there's another guy that's a free agent this year, you know. His name's Boogie Cousins. Could Boogie and Paul George on that team?
Well, now you're talking about intriguing. A guy who's literally never won anything ever. Joining a team that's had...
How did he do in Kentucky? Did they win at Kentucky when he was there?
No, I don't think they did.
Well, yeah, and it sounds on paper like a team that would underperform. But you never know.
I mean, that team just screams, though, on paper. Yeah, they're going to definitely underperform. Boogie and Paul George.
That screams like 6 seed, and then like... That screams like 3 coaches are getting...
Before the end of the season.
But, I mean, you can't deny that Boogie Cousins is a great player, and I think playing around Anthony Davis has made him better. It
ain't one shit.
Changes attitude a little bit.
Well, 7 seed. We'll see. Ain't one
shit. He's also never played on a team this good. Cousins hasn't. I mean, he's never played with a guy as good as Anthony Davis.
I mean, they've played with each other for a while, for like more than a year. I mean,
it's been about a year now. I mean, they're 7 seed in the West. I mean, that's
not great.
For a team
that's not what they expected.
Well, they also, if you look at the roster constructed around them, I mean, They're banking on Solomon Hill coming back and being good. Rondo's their point guard. Rajon Rondo in 2018 is their starting point guard. They've had some injury issues with the Pelicans. I'm not going to blame it all on Cousins and Davis because both guys should probably start the All-Star game. They're having great years.
But, I mean, at what point do we look at this nagging thing with Cousins is that all of his teams don't seem to win anything ever?
I think some of that, though, is just in the wrong place.
That was fine when he was at Sacramento. Like, when you trade places and it's still the wrong place.
But, I mean, he's in New Orleans. They're a playoff team. On a team, if you go through their roster, Dan, go through the Pelicans roster. It is one of the worst rosters in the NBA. And you look at their cap room, some of the contracts on that team, Omar Asik making what, like almost $20, $30 million a year. Solomon Hill's making 16. No,
yeah, but you've got another super duper ungodly star next to you. Like, that should just be
taking,
enough.
But,
like, yeah, I hear what you're saying.
But it's not in the Western Conference.
But look at Cleveland. Like, their team was LeBron. I mean, look at them this year. Their team is just LeBron, Kevin Love, and like ghosts.
LeBron's still like the best player in the NBA.
But I'm not saying you got to be that good, but you got to at least be like a 4 seed.
But that's not a fair comparison, though. Like, a better comparison might be, like, look what Portland is with McCollum and Lillard.
Portland doesn't have a single guy on their team that has the reputation. Well, Lillard. They got one dude on their team who has that kind of...
No, McCollum's pretty good.
But he's nowhere near what people talk about with Boogie and Unibrow. Like, he's not even in that same discussion.
I'm trying to think of a comparison that works. But, I mean, it's also, like, if the Pelicans were in the Eastern Conference, they're probably, like, the 3 seed right now, to be fair. You know, because they're probably better than Philadelphia. They're probably better than Milwaukee. I don't know. They're not as well coached as Boston. They're not as deep. And they're definitely not better than Cleveland. But, I mean, when you have to play the Spurs,
I'm not
Rockets,
sure.
You know,
I'm not sure either one of their players is as good as Kyrie, which is the big issue. I don't think Boogie's as good as Kyrie.
But look at that team.
But you've got two
guys
who everyone says are two of the best players in the NBA. It shouldn't matter who the rest of the team is. It absolutely shouldn't matter.
Well, it does in the Western Conference, Dan. It does. When you have the Rockets, who have three of the better players,
you're not
going to
beat the Warriors and the Rockets. If you truly had two
you're
of
not
the
gonna,
top
you're also
10
not gonna
players,
be the Spurs. You're not as well coached as the Spurs. Not going to be as good as Spurs. You're not going to be as good as Minnesota.
You should be better than
Anthony
Minnesota.
Towns is
you
better
should
than
absolutely you. Be way better than Minnesota.
Okay, 100%.
You should absolutely kick Minnesota's
also
ass.
Also, another
up
bad
and down
roster, but Minnesota's got, in my opinion, Minnesota's got two guys better than those two. I'd rather have Cat and Butler.
Well, then, all right, then. Then that should be the death of what we talk about when we talk about Brown and we talk about Boogie. If Cat is better than both of them, then let's
I don't know if he's
call
better.
This thing
I think
off.
He fits. I think he fits what they do. I think the issue with the Pelicans is just that roster sucks.
But they are two,
like, you
those
got guys,
two guys
you
together.
Two guys.
It should not
Dan,
matter,
this isn't
dude.
The '90s. This isn't the '90s.
You've got two. You've got
two
guys who people talk about as being top 10 players. Minnesota has one. Like, Butler is an old
Butler
ass man.
He's on the fringe. He's like 30.
Butler is an old-ass man. I'm sorry.
Because of those miles.
He's got miles on his ass.
Yeah.
And their coach is a dumbass.
Minnesota.
Their coach is a straight-up dumbass.
Speaking of Minnesota. Yeah. Speaking of Minnesota and something I kind of want to move on to, we kind of talk about the trade deadline coming up. Look over that Minnesota roster. They've got two guys who can play at the wing. Everyone else is like a guard and a big man. It is one of the stupidest rosters in NBA history. And it's like, well, no duh, Wiggins has to play 40 minutes a night because they're not going to play Shabazz.
It wouldn't matter. If they had 17 forwards, he would still play 700 minutes a night.
No, because also they picked the worst kind of coach to do in this kind of new NBA where it's like, I feel way more rotation heavy and more based on chemistry and what guys are doing. I mean, Minnesota's, they're going to make the playoffs. They might win their first series. They're going to get destroyed. And not even because of talent. I think because of fatigue.
That's what happened to the Bulls every year. They would run off great records and then get their ass beat in the playoffs. So, I mean,
Minnesota probably guaranteed Carl Anthony Towns will probably never reach his potential by hiring Thibs.
They've got to fire him.
I think it'll get you to playoffs this year. But honestly, if they don't fire him
in the offseason, it's malpractice. I don't care, they're going to make the playoffs
for the first time in 20 years.
I don't care. That guy is never going to win you a thing.
It was a dumb hire.
He will never, ever, ever, never,
Jimmy Butler is 28.
He might as well be 40. That man will never, ever, in the history of his life, ever win a thing as a head coach. Ever. Ever. Everything he believes as a head coach goes against everything we know about sports science in 2018. He is scum. He is literally a dude standing up there saying the world is flat. Like, everything we know about the world that we live in says that he's wrong.
Well, the world is flat, Dan. Forget that.
Yeah. Who can forget?
I'm trying to look up Jimmy Butler. Who's Jimmy Butler dating now?
I don't know. Probably like a
Pretty Little Liars star. Shay Mitchell. That was one of the Google questions.
Well, see, my favorite thing now is I hope there becomes a trend of, like, old NBA players, like, who maybe don't have the money dating much older actresses as sugar mamas. I want Baron Davis to start that.
Shay Mitchell is not an older actress. Well, she's 30, so she's older than Jimmy Butler, actually.
Yeah, but again, he's got miles on him. He's an old soul.
No. But it's like my favorite thing, though, is when they're talking about Baron Davis dating, who is it, the lady from Star Wars?
Okay, she's not the lady from Star Wars. She was in Jurassic Park, but...
Was she the blonde chick in Jurassic Park?
Yep.
Wow, she looks better now.
She was also... I agree, but she was also...
Women look awful. Then, like, you go back and watch the 90s, and unless you were, like gothic kind of looking, like, no girl looked good. I don't know what the fuck happened.
They kind of went out of their way to make everybody look fucking bad.
Yeah, but it feels like something different happened with makeup science, like, from 2000 to, like,
you just realize, like, in 10 years, we'll be looking back going, man, everybody in the 2000s looked bad. Like,
yeah, Kim Kardashian was hideous.
That's the 2010s.
No, everybody will have, like, hologram faces.
The 2000s was the decade of, like, everyone wearing pants so fucking low. Every girl wearing pants so low. That you can literally see their asshole hanging out.
You can see their asshole. And that's what...
That's not the style anymore.
It's tough.
It went away. It's now all high-waisted.
But Dan, I want to move on. I want to talk NBA trade deadline rumors. Did you get a chance to read the Wodge article?
I did not. I did not. I did not.
Well, I was kind of hoping you did. Let me put He talks about some guys who could move. I think the first big one, DeAndre Jordan from the Clippers. I think that's the big piece everyone's going to talk about. Where is he going to go? I'm not sure he gets moved at all, though, because the Clippers keep winning for some reason.
Also, who the fuck wants DeAndre Jordan?
Well, I think the Wizards would want him, but they can't really give anything up to get him. I think the Bucks would love him.
What value does DeAndre Jordan have on a team that wants to win a title?
He plays good defense.
Does he? He's never been a top 10 defensive interior player. Ever.
He's a good...
Ever.
He's a good, better team defender.
He's a rebounder.
Better team defender.
He's a rebounder. The most overrated thing in the NBA, in the modern NBA, a defensive rebounder. Yeah.
But I think he's a good help defender. I think he does things pretty well.
He is an above average defender who gets talked about as a great defender because Clippers fans, not necessarily anymore because obviously it's over for them, but at the peak of the Clippers, they had to justify the fact that this fucking turd was being given a big money contract and was being promoted as being an important part of the team. So they had to pretend that he's a great defender because his offense sucks, which is one of the all-time, like, it, when long after we're gone, long after both you and I are, yeah,
okay,
our memory,
well, Dan, you know who I could see?
NBA fans will be, you know, overrating a city like offensive player's defense.
But if you put DeAndre Jordan on the Cavs,
they're the same team. They change nothing.
At center? I mean, I like him better at center than, like, Love.
No, you're better off with
Love.
With
the four. Well, the issue, too, is, like, you're playing Thomas. So, like, you're already at a handicap on defense if you're the Cavs. So, like, you got to keep, you know. And, like, Love, LeBron, and Jordan. That's a pretty big, you know, front court.
I mean, but DeAndre's not good.
He's good.
He's not good. I mean, he's a league average player who's been overrated.
Well, I think
that's
the big one. Who
I'd give you a Sam sandwich for him. I would take him. I would take him if you gave him to me. I'm not giving you anything of any value for DeAndre Jordan.
You wouldn't give, like, if you're the Bucks, you could trade, like, Chris Middleton in a first-round pick for him.
No! I'm not trading you a first-round pick for DeAndre Jordan. Are you insane?
Well, the pick's going to be, like, 20th.
No!
Because, like, this draft is really, like, top five. And then, like,
I don't care. I might get another DeAndre Jordan at 20th.
That's true. Do you see anything you've seen? Do you think we'll see a major trade? Do you think your Hornets will make a major trade?
Do you mean, like, just give away anything they have that has any value and start over?
Just try to tank as hard as possible?
Yeah. I mean, I could see that.
Because Dwight's having a really good year.
I mean, if anybody – I mean, Dwight's had a good year, but they've been terrible. So if anybody wants him for a rental, I mean, I guess. But – I mean, his reputation is this drizzling shit, so who's going to give you... I mean, if they can get anything for him, yeah, trade him. But I have a hard time believing they're going to get anything. Because, again, it's going to be the same thing. It's like, who the fuck wants Dwight Howard? Who wants to win anything?
Yeah, no one wants him around. All right, Dan, before we get out of here, let's talk a little NFL action. You're going to be quite... Like, you're going to have to start watching these games now. Are you ready for this?
It's that time of the year.
Yep.
It's that time of the year where I start having NFL opinions, suddenly.
Yes. So I'm going to give you a little crash course. So what questions do you have, Dan? You look around the playoff scene right now. Any questions, comments? Go through, look at some of these games coming up this weekend.
How did Kansas City blow that game to Tennessee? How did that happen?
Because
I thought they were the best
team. Andy Reid. Because they're Kansas City, too. We talked about it with Georgia, the Falcons. Like, it's what Kansas City does. I mean, what did they blow to Indianapolis, like, 5 years ago? It was, like, a 28-point lead in the, like, halfway through the third quarter. And they blew it to the Colts and Andrew Luck. It's just what they do, baby. And I think the other issue is, too, Kansas City just got away from the run game, and Tennessee got a good spark. I mean, Mariota threw a touchdown pass to himself. He gets the key block on the, you know, maybe the biggest run of the game. I don't think it handled the Mariota experience, if you will.
Do you think the negative, though, with Mariota is that he's keeping that shitty coach still in the job? And that they maybe be better if, like, he just, like, tweaked his hamstring and missed, like, 6 weeks of the season
probably,
and they bottomed out and fired him?
I think so, but I think if you're, you know, if you're Mariota, it's like, well, you never know, I guess. I mean, you never know. I mean, the Patriots are really exploding, then maybe you upset New England this week. And then all hell breaks loose.
Yeah, you know? If that happened, that'd be funny as hell.
Yeah. So, but let's go through these games. If you have any questions about either team, I'll answer them. This will be a primer to get ready. Let's start Saturday, 4:35 on NBC. Atlanta travels to Philadelphia. Atlanta favored by 3 on the road, lower seed.
I mean, didn't this just come down to one team's got a veteran quarterback and the other team's got a guy who's never really been in the spot?
Nick Foles. Yeah. Yeah, Nick Foles.
Oh, God, it's Nick Foles?
Former Florida State. Yeah,
Nick Foles. It's not even the North Carson. Dakota kid?
No, he got hurt.
Oh, man.
He, like, tore his ACL, like, 3 weeks ago. Yeah.
Atlanta has to win this, right?
So, yeah. So Atlanta will probably
And Nick Foles went to Arizona,
I think the issue... Yeah, I think the issue here for Atlanta, like, going against Philadelphia here is, like, Philadelphia's got a really good front seven. Can Atlanta block that? So Aaron Donald destroyed Atlanta last week. But it didn't matter. They still won. Atlanta's defense is playing lights out right now. I don't see Philadelphia doing too well. I mean, if you can hold Todd Gurley to what they did, JJ and you know, LeGarrette Blount aren't as good as Todd Gurley. But Atlanta keeps playing good defense.
Isn't the thing on Nick Foles is that, like, randomly he'll just, like, drop 400 yards on you and, like, throw 7 touchdowns in a game, and then the next week he'll throw 14 interceptions.
But usually not, because usually he drops out on, like, the Lions or something. And then, also that was when Chip Kelly was there, so.
Fair enough.
If I remember correctly. All right, but here's our next game, Dan. Who are you picking? Got Atlanta?
I mean, they have to win that, right? Like, come on.
You'd think so. Well, it's Atlanta, though. You never know. Next up, Tennessee, New England. New England's a 13.5-point favorite. I'm taking Tennessee catching this. I think something's wrong in New England. The stories like that never come out, right, Dan? The story from the past week on ESPN. And it felt like it was Belichick who, like, was the lead.
It feels like Belichick's on his way out of it. Like, that feels like... Yeah. Belichick is like,
I think he's just kind of sick. Like, he knows Tom Brady's old. He's got this weird.
I think he's pissed off that, like, that he got forced to trade Jimmy Garoppolo. I mean, yeah. I just think that's the bottom line, is that he saw Jimmy Garoppolo as his legacy. And that's what the article pointed out, is that, you know, Tom Brady was getting towards the end of his career and he found another one, in his opinion. Yeah. And he was going to be able to, like.
And then they told him, we'll just draft another one and figure it out. I think that's kind of.
And I think
let's go do your job.
And the line in that article that really rang the truest to me was, "Bill Belichick believes when an owner starts making decisions, it's time to leave." And it's like, "Yep, that feels."
And you could tell
that is Bill Parcells through and through. That is Bill Belichick's mentor, and yeah, that just feels right.
A lot of that too is, you look at that article and how you can kind of tell it was Belichick was a lot of the framing where, like, Belichick just wants to go to work.
Yes.
Like, kind of like those little quotes that painted Belichick in a better light. And it's like, oh, he's clearly the leaker. Maybe not him. Maybe he had some.
Whatever. I mean, I doubt Bill Belichick called the writer, but it's definitely people from Bill Belichick's camp.
Yeah, from his camp, yes. If you will.
Bill Belichick.
I'm taking Tennessee catching here. I don't think Tennessee wins, but I'm going to take him catching. I think something's the matter in New England. Probably means New England wins, but, like,
you know what? Fuck it. Tennessee wins and Bill Belichick quits in the postgame. I was down to move on to Sunday. NE, and I'll be taking over the HC of the NYG.
Let's move on now. Jacksonville travels to Pitt. Pitt's favored by 7.5. Did you get a chance to watch Jacksonville?
I saw the stat line after the game and saw that Blake Bortles was basically like set quarterbacking back 20 years.
He pulled like a Jalen Hurts, but yeah. That game was a really bad game to watch, but it became such an experience. Well, it, like, transcended life and the universe and time itself, Dan, that game. It was one of my favorite games I've watched all year. I can't tell you why. It was just so bad.
Didn't Bortles attempt, like, 25 passes and throw for, like, 40 yards or something?
60, yeah. Yeah. I think he rushed for 66 and threw for 65.
Blake Bortles running the football, huh?
Yeah. So, you know what? I think Jacksonville does it again. That defense killed Pittsburgh, you know, a couple of weeks ago. Pittsburgh says they're different. I don't think so. I think Jacksonville wins again. I think Jacksonville is going to go to the Super Bowl. Firmly believe, with the worst quarterback since Trent Dilfer.
That would be very, very funny, and I hope it happens.
But that's how good
this defense would be the most.
You look at the stats.
It would be the most fitting, you know, thing to, like, fuck up, you know. To, like, fuck up the NFL, this horrible season of ratings for them. And then it's like, oh, man.
Atlanta-Jacksonville.
I can't imagine a less appetizing matchup.
Minnesota-Jacksonville.
No, that would actually be better because you've got two different geographical regions.
Well, and?
Like, Atlanta-Jacksonville is basically the Georgia-Alabama game, but with two fan bases that barely exist.
But the fun thing, too, with the Minnesota thing is if Atlanta wins and Minnesota keeps winning, Minnesota will play every game in their home stadium because the Super Bowl this year is at Minnesota.
Wow. That's never happened, has it?
Fun stuff.
Has a team ever gotten to play in their home stadium?
No, never happened before. I don't think Miami ever got to, so I don't think so.
Wait, where was the Super Bowl last year? Did Atlanta get to play in the Georgia Dome? The new Georgia Dome?
No, it was in Houston.
Okay.
It's in Houston. I think the Atlanta Super Bowl doesn't come for, like, two more years. I think it's in Miami next year and then Atlanta in, like, 2020. But let's move on now. Let's talk New Orleans, Minnesota, Dan. Minnesota favored by 4.5. Who you got here? One of the best defenses in the NFL versus a quarterback who doesn't play so well on the road in the playoffs in Drew Brees. Not that it matters. It's still in a dome, so I guess it
I
canceled out.
He's been really good.
What are your questions?
He's been really good, though, from what I've heard, because it's like people have talked about, oh, this is one of his worst seasons, and it's like, well, they just throw the ball less because they actually have a running game this year and a defense.
It's his worst season because they've never had that good of a team around.
But it's not really his worst season. He's leading the NFL in efficiency. Like, he just literally is just, hey, I don't know any stats except counting stats. And it's like his fantasy stats are lower, but literally everything else about how you judge a quarterback is up or as high as ever. Yeah.
Buddy runs into a quarterback and your boy, was it Case Keenum?
Case Keenum, Houston Cougars legend.
I believe that is the Minnesota. I totally blanked on his name. I'm really sorry about that. Yeah, Case Keenum.
You're going to have to apologize to his family for that.
Yes, Dan, who threw for over 3,500 yards, and I think he missed like two or three games. Only threw seven picks, 22 touchdowns. He's having a resurgence. Minnesota's defense is good. I hate the Saints. Give me Minnesota. And then a matchup, Atlanta, Minnesota again in the NFC Championship game 20 years later.
Jesus, just stick the knife in on the fucking poor Vikings fans, reminding them of that horror.
Yeah, remember that when your kicker had missed a field goal all year and he missed it? And then Morton Anderson bested Gary Anderson.
God, you just gotta hurt. You just want to hurt people. It's all you want to do, just hurt people.
Yeah, remember that team had Randall Cunningham having like his last good season ever. Rookie Randy Moss, Chris Carter, Hunter, who's the running back? Like
Robert Smith or one something? Of the most forgotten great players in NBA history.
In NBA history, never remembered. On the defensive side, you had what? Who's that defensive end?
Well, that Carter. Was the thing, is that their defense sucked.
They had a good pass rush. I think.
John Randall was an excellent pass rusher and defensive
Randall.
Tackle.
Yes.
But they just
painted. I copied that in high school, Dan. No, he painted his face with the horns.
Yeah, like
the triangles.
He would do like crazy, like eye makeup.
Yeah, it was fun. That's the fun part about being a defensive lineman, is you get to wear makeup. Don't tell the girls that. That's why boys play football, is to wear makeup.
Sure,
it's to have makeup put on by another naked man in front of them.
And that is the key. Everybody has to be naked, or else it's just not as fun.
Always naked. And be a wreck the whole time. But damn, that's this week's slate of the NFL playoffs, and things could go really bad for the NFL here, right?
Like, there's some pretty bad matchups that are on the table.
I mean, you could have New England, Pittsburgh. That's the dream, and maybe like New Orleans, Philadelphia, or Minnesota, Philadelphia. But you could end up with like Atlanta, Minnesota, and Jacksonville, Tennessee. This could go very poorly for the NFL. It'll probably go the worst possible scenario.
Given how this year has gone for everybody, including the NFL, that's probably what happens.
And that's it. That's it from sports. Anything else from the sports world, Dan? Before we get out of here,
God, I think that does it for me. I've had a crazy week, so I'm sad that college football is over. I think I am. I'm ready for this off season. I'm ready to see what fucking craziness happens in this off season. I have a feeling some Looney Tunes shit's about to go.
Well, we still have some teams who haven't hired. Like Arizona still doesn't have a coach. Right?
Yeah, we didn't even talk about that. Like that is definitely a topic for a different day.
Because I assume Les Miles isn't going there. Because I felt like he wasn't when I first heard it, but I don't think Les Miles would go there. When he starts in what? Basically in February?
Oh, Les Miles would walk over hot coals to get a job. So, yeah, he'll take that job.
You think?
Yeah, nobody wants him. He's washed up.
That's true. I just wouldn't care if I was Les Miles. I got my money.
He apparently wants...
You're done. You won a national championship.
He apparently wants a chance to prove that he's still a great coach.
That's stupid.
Stupid having pride.
Just be a color commentator. You're the best coach in LSU history, basically.
Well, I mean, other than that other guy...
Well, he doesn't count because he left. You're the best long-term coach in LSU history. Not named Nick Saban. I don't know why I think Les Miles' legacy is great. I think he's definitely an LSU Hall of Famer. That makes sense. Probably a college football Hall of Famer, considering what he did at LSU. He had a pretty good run.
Sure.
Hey, nothing wrong with that. Get your national championship? Sure. Why are you going to go to Arizona and just be old? Why are you going to go and be Joe Namath for the LA Rams? you know?
Because you got fired. Sad. And you want to prove that they were wrong.
But they were right.
But you want to prove
unless Les Miles, what if Les Miles tried to reinvent himself and he starts talking like a millennial or like a Generation Z-er or whatever? Like he's like, oh, Arizona's lit, fam.
What's that thing that they make?
This is on fleet.
What is that thing they make fun of?
I just got back from Soul Cycle.
What's that thing they make fun of on Chapo Trap House? The shoe looks like a fam.
Shoes look like a fam.
Shoes look like a fam.
Like, what if his first press conference is just shoes look like a fam, homie? Yeah, what if he does that? What if he's like, he's coming in, he's got a little pump with him or something? I'd like to see that from Les Miles. You know, Les Miles, if you're listening, give us a call. I know how to.
We have some ideas.
Some ideas. They'll keep you fleek as fuck, or as AF.
Sure.
And we're going to get you woke.
I feel like he's already woke. He is a white dude who has coached in the South in the SEC for a long time. I feel like all those coaches have had to become woke whether they wanted to or not. Because, hey, you got to get players.
I think they just get to stay. Yeah.
You got to get players in here.
Maybe. I don't know. I don't see, like, Saban as a woke guy.
Nick Saban's a Democrat. Yeah.
Really? Well, he's from Michigan.
He's from Ohio, actually. But
same thing. Same. Sorry. Same place.
And his players protested Donald Trump.
They both suck.
I mean, he didn't put his...
That's right, yelled fuck Trump. Yeah.
Nick Saban yelled fuck Trump. You heard it here.
Nick Saban yelled fuck Trump. No, Scarborough did. Did you see that on Twitter where people were freaking out and they were like, the Alabama racist player. I think more Georgia fans were probably doing that, I would assume.
Yeah.
That's pretty interesting. I guess we didn't really talk about Trump. Why was Donald Trump in the national, just to get attention?
Show how much he loves the national anthem, unlike these god dang uppity players.
He knew all the words.
He definitely did not fuck up the national anthem.
Everyone hated it from what I could tell. Like, people couldn't go to the stadium earlier. Traffic was bad.
Yeah, he fucked it up for everybody. Even Trump supporters who would normally like him. And it's like, fuck, you made it harder to get to the gate.
No, I know a Trump supporter, and I asked him, like, what do you think about him coming to the game? And he's like, why is this idiot coming? Like, they're like, why are you here? Because, like, these people don't want, like some people...
Most normal people, okay? Even people who are, like, Republican. Yeah. Like, this is not, like, this is not a Republican-Democrat thing. Most people, when they go to a fucking national championship football game, for 1 minute want a respite.
And it was like with the Colin Kaepernick stuff too. A lot of it wasn't just. I mean, a lot of it probably was a little bit of racism, but like a lot of it was just people don't want to think about shit when they watch sports.
Yes,
you know, I think that's just part of it. Sorry, I mean it's entertainment. You know what you're gonna do, but
yep.
So there we go. So I guess that could be my fuck you of the week to the president. Unprecedented, what, six times now, I think.
Yeah, he's probably the all time leader. In fuck yous of the week.
And the queen.
Yeah, that's the neck and neck.
You know what, Dan? I promise in the new year that we will go more after the queen.
You know what?
I'm kind of sick of that old crotchety bitch.
I'm so sick of, like, everything involving royalty.
God. And, like, people just put up with it.
Oh, have you heard the news?
What? Like, literally, the monarchy article in the New York Times?
No, but like...
Where it's like, of course the Duke of Archibald supports monarchy.
Well, yeah, and it's also like...
He's got to fuck his high cousin his whole
like,
life.
Look at that creepy little royal motherfucker has made the decision to like marry a person of like mixed race heritage.
And, yeah, couldn't marry like a full black person.
But like the result is like all of his fucking worthless family members are now like freaking out that there's gonna be a black in the family. Like his shitty aunt wore a fucking like lawn jockey brooch at a party.
She was like, it was a gift.
And she was just like, oh, I had no idea this would be offensive to anyone. It
probably didn't though. Probably just
no. She
okay.
Also like 15 years ago got caught in an airport just screaming the N-word at people. No, it wasn't even like the N-word. It was like Mr. Burns like racial epithet. It's like, you black.
Oh yeah, it was. It was like, yeah, like you. I don't even want to, like something involving the jungle or something.
It definitely
right?
involved
remember.
The Moors. That's all. That's all I know. But, like, yeah, the anyone who has ever been a member of a royal family can get fucked. I hope you get your head cut off, and but I hope all your property
maybe,
gets given
maybe
to
this
a
is what
family.
Ends the royal family, is they go, well, we can't let a black person be on this, so they just give all the money away. That would be, like, the best solution. That would be the funniest solution, I think, to all
and,
of this. It's like their racism does something positive.
And thumbs up to the week.
Like, we're going to give all this money to the NHS so this black boy can't. So it's, like, half, like, this person who's a fourth of a black person can't.
But thumbs up of the week goes to Australia, who apparently are very close to having a vote on leaving the Commonwealth and becoming a republic.
Do it.
Just
do
telling
it, Australia. Get out. Oh, you're not going to be in the Commonwealth Games. And who cares? You don't need to be in that shit. Stupid. Do a game with New England and Thailand or something.
New England?
No. New Zealand.
You said
New
England.
England.
You definitely said
New England.
England.
New England. New England and Thailand. That's...
I mean, that would work. I'd watch that.
Or Australia... You know what Australia really should do, Dan? Is do its destiny. Have it towed to, like, right outside of, like, the Gulf and just be part of Florida.
That would fit better Australia. Than most people in Australia would be willing to admit.
Australia is Florida. It's just they have accents and they look better, so people think... Well, people in Florida are hot, so that's not fair.
Parts.
But they have, like, better, they have smarter accents. But even, like, a redneck girl in the Gulf, like, it'd be pretty attractive, you know? Like, not a lot of, but a lot of Australians probably aren't. They probably look like Rebel Wilson, I would assume. Like, I assume Australia is, like, 9 out of 10 people look like Rebel Wilson, and then, like, one looks like...
See, that's where you fucked up, because you've got to recalibrate yourself to being in a foreign country. No one has as many fat people as we do.
And it's too hot to be fat.
Like,
in Australia, right?
You
like,
always have to keep in constantly. Mind is that in America we're so much fatter than everybody else. So it's not like there's no fat. Because
we're better.
It's not like there's no fat people.
Yeah.
But when you walk around in any other country,
everyone in Australia
you
just
don't
really
see
ugly.
This many fat people.
Who's an ugly Australian person then? Like everyone looks like Andrew.
See, the only people I know of from Australia are people on cooking shows. So I'm gonna say.
They all look like Julia
Gary.
Childs.
Gary, the host of one of the three hosts of MasterChef Australia. That guy looks fucking
also,
terrible.
Also, Australia, you can still do blackface in Australia.
You can do that in Europe, too.
That's ridiculous. Why do they get to do it? We
can't. Because they're all, like, openly racist and have been for, like, 500 years.
That's why Australia will fit great in the Gulf Coast. So, Australia, if you're listening, maybe think about tolling the island. I think you can do that. Just put a, you know... An anchor on it, mate, or a little towboat, tug on up.
Okay, that sounds like goof. You're telling them to do something else.
Tug on up to the goof, mate.
And on that note.
Go to Florida.
On that note.
I'm going to Club La Vila, mate. I can't. That was a little mess.
That was a person who's an Australian exchange student who's been here a little too long. And it's starting to rub off on him. And when they go home, they'll never be fully accepted again.
I like this, though. We're going to get Australia to be part of Florida. That's the power hour guarantee.
You stick with us, America. You come down.
And plus, an Australia game can start at a decent time for everybody. We just move it back. Well, do we get one of those next year, Dan? Do we know yet?
What's that?
Look ahead. The Australia college game?
Oh, yeah. That's become a new thing, always, to open up the season.
Okay, are they going to announce it? Yeah. I'm intrigued to watch Rice play.
It is always Rice, open up isn't it? It's like, it was this year it was Rice, last year it was Hawaii. And Hawaii kind of makes some sense, because it's like, well, I mean, that isn't as far a plane ride for them. Plus, wherever they go,
it should
is
just
a
be
crazy
like Hawaii.
Plane ride.
Hawaii and UMass. In Australia.
Yeah, let's send that game to the... Let's export that one. That's like when the NFL sends,
have
like...
Have fun with that.
Sends, like, Tampa Bay to go play, you know... I don't know. The fucking...
Yeah, it's like this year, I think it was, like, the Browns went to win.
Of course, yeah. The Browns play, like, you know, Tampa Bay.
It's like Browns-Jags every year.
Like, playing in England is, like, the no prize of the NFL. Like, nobody actually wants to do it. And they don't care about sending a bad team because the people there don't know.
The only way to stay off like Hard Knocks is to make you go play in London, and you don't have to be on Hard Knocks.
And then
I love the NFL has all this shit that like you have to do that no one wants to, so you don't have to do, like, something else that's awful.
But yet...
like, you get the Super Bowl if you're on Hard Knocks or something.
But yet, they can't do anything about the fact that the owner of the Cleveland Browns is an open racist. Womp womp.
They got rid of Jerry Richardson, your boy. Are you hyped for Steph Curry to own the Panthers?
I'd love it. I just hope we don't get, like, Jimmy Haslam, too. Like, that's the thing, is that, well, hey, I'm not a Panthers fan, so I don't really care.
Yeah.
But it is fun when they're not bad, because it gives you something else to watch if they're good. The thing about the Jerry Richardson era in Carolina is that the Panthers were almost always competent. Like, they were very rarely a great team. In fact, I think the only great Panthers team I can ever remember is the Cam Newton team a few years ago. Even the team that made their first Super Bowl was like, well, this team's really good at running the ball, and Stephen Davis is great, but, you know, I mean.
And what is it like, Dell Holm made, like, a bunch of miracle plays or something?
Well,
Dell Holm
played
too.
One of the greatest games in the history of the Super Bowl that year. Like, he.
Yeah.
He was actually better than Tom Brady that day. I mean, just.
Former New Orleans Saints superstar, Jake Dell Holm.
You know, and Steve Smith was an all-time great player. Like, I would say.
Yeah.
Maybe the greatest wide receiver of all time. Fight me on it. But you know, a lot of but they're almost, the Panthers always have this like one big gaping hole on their team that keeps them from being a great team. But just the fact that Jerry Richardson's time there, they were almost always competent. Like that's better than what most fan bases get. You know.
Yeah.
So there's no real guarantee that with a different owner, like, oh man, this could go real bad. Like, they could...
Maybe a more racist owner. Like, Robert Kraft's probably pretty racist, and look how good they are. Maybe the key in the NFL is to be more racist.
I think Jimmy Haslam has proved that false. And on that note...
Well, I mean, I think...
And on that note of perhaps being... of perhaps pro-racism, we say... we bid you adieu and say, play the music, Jason.